Scottrodites, my name is Jonathan Weir. Happy to be spending my Monday night with you guys. Text us at 888-973-CHIRO. That's 888-973. And then you can literally type the letters K-I-R-O if you would like to get in on the conversation. Here's the first thing I want to talk about this hour. You hear this story, and it's hard to be anything but outraged. But personally, I think someone should probably call the NRA and see if they'll help this guy out. And I'm not even kidding. I think he actually could be benefited by some of that NRA money that's usually going, you know, to congressmen or judges to maybe help him out. He's a man in King County. His name is William Tolliver. You might know his name because he, back in March, was released from jail, or he's being held on March 2nd. He was released from jail, which a lot of people were very upset about because he's also accused of committing a mass shooting. In January of 2020, it was outside of McDonald's at 3rd Avenue and Pine Street. He shot one person, and I'm sorry, he shot six people and killed one person. So one person, six injured. He's being charged with first-degree murder and multiple other crimes involved in the shooting. And the judge let him out of jail because it's some bleeding heart progressive lib who wants to release the criminals back onto the street so that they can kill your families and shoot your dogs. Well, he's not out on the street anymore because he actually was just arrested again for felony harassment, which I don't know exactly what that is. It could be sending threatening letters. It could be brandishing a gun. It could be a lot of things. So he's going to be back. He's back in jail for violating the thing. And by the thing, I mean literally they asked him to be good and to promise that he would show back up for court when his trial date was up. And he was like, okay, I will. So it's infuriating for a lot of people. I saw this story today and saw the reaction from a lot of people, which I'm one of the few hosts that actually, instead of just going, here's my reaction to it, I like seeing what other people have to say about it. And everybody who I've seen talking about it is mad that he was let out again, mad that now he's harassed somebody else, and mad that our system sucks and let us down so thoroughly. But here's my question. Is it that cut and dry? Because I said this last hour. I'm somebody who likes to give people the benefit of the doubt. And if a judge allowed this guy out of jail before his trial and let him live with his grandmother, which is what happened, I have to assume that there had to be a reason for that. Well, let's look at the guy's case. It's been over 3 years. He's been in jail for 3+ years. That should tell you that this isn't a slam dunk case. Even though everyone says, mass shooting, he killed this guy, wounded six other people. It's not a slam dunk case. And if you actually bother to look into what happened with William Tolliver, he was outside of a McDonald's restaurant at 3rd Avenue and Pine Street. And there was a confrontation with another man. Guns were pulled out, and William Tolliver claims he was shooting in self-defense. And in fact, his friend, Marquise Tolbert, was already indicted for the shooting and was acquitted because they said it was self-defense. The guy he was trying to shoot all but said that he was the aggressor, said that he was pulling out his gun to kill William Tolliver when he got shot at himself. So it's not a cut and dry case. It's not that easy. Now, I'm not sitting here and arguing that the guy should have been let out of jail, considering you know, 2 months later, he was reoffending and is back in jail. I don't know if that was maybe the smartest idea, but it is funny to me how quickly everyone just jumped onto this guy is obviously a killer. This guy is obviously a danger to society. This guy obviously did it. I think this guy's going to be found not guilty of the shooting. The harassment, I have no idea. But of the shooting, I think he's got a good case. And again, you should look at any case. If it takes over 3 years for them to bring you to trial, chances are they don't have as much as they would like. And they're developing the case. Remember the guy in the other guy in King County that was held in jail for 9 years waiting for a trial, currently suing? Here's the thing. Shouldn't the NRA be helping this guy? And I mean that sincerely. I'm not even saying this as a criticism necessarily of the NRA, other than, isn't this a good use of their resources? This guy claims it was self-defense. This guy claims that the guy that he shot at was pulling out his gun and he was firing at him in self-defense. Now, obviously, he's not a very good shot. Because unfortunately, he hit a bunch of other people. Is this self-defense? Is this what a good guy with a gun looks like? I don't know. And before you say, well, Washington State doesn't have a stand your ground law, so he would be SOL in that case. He can't say, well, hey, I was doing the stand your ground thing. I was just defending myself. Actually, the state Supreme Court has held that there is no duty to retreat before using force in public. So more or less, there is a de facto stand your ground law in the state of Washington. It's just not codified. So I don't know. I just find the case very interesting. I want to see what's going to happen there. And I want to see if the NRA is going to actually, you know, defend the guy. That would be, again, very interesting. Moving on. Do you live in a mobile home? Well, if you do, you might not be for long. Because apparently, all across the country, they are raising, meaning destroying, older mobile home parks, which has advocates worried. They say that bulldozing them permanently eliminates some of the already limited housing for the poorest of the poor. Residents may have to double up with relatives or live in their cars. Evictions are going to spike. Industry groups estimate that more than, I didn't know this, that it was this many. But 20 million people live in 43,000 mobile home parks across the United States. 20 million people. There are efforts underway to revitalize old mobile home, but they have limits because mobile homes, by the way, aren't actually mobile, and moving them can be very costly. The oldest homes are often too decrepit to move at all, and that's the problem, is these homes are decrepit. The parks are getting old. It is, for some communities, they consider it a blight. And while they might be right, that might be a bit of an eyesore, where the hell are these people supposed to go? Where are they supposed to live? I know their house is ugly. And I know you would really like to get rid of it and probably put a strip mall in there. But they need a place to live. And you can claim it's a safety hazard or whatever. Doesn't change the fact that these people need to live somewhere. You know, it used to be in this country that you would buy a home that was called a starter home. It might have even been a mobile home. You'd pay cheap rent on a lot if you owned a mobile home, or you'd pay a really low rate mortgage for your crappy house in a crappy neighborhood. You would save up money while you were living there, and then you would buy a house in a nicer area. But now you can't afford to buy a house. You can't afford to rent in a nicer neighborhood. And the place you're living is called an eyesore and is being destroyed. And some people always say, well, they should work harder. And then they can get a better house. They just need to work harder. Where? Where is their job that will pay them $6,000 a month? Because that's how much they need to make on average to afford a decent house in this country. Not $6,000 a month, but a third of that needs to go to rent. And unfortunately, we have a lot of people who are paying more than half of their income, gross income, in rent, which is unsustainable. People just need to work harder. They do. Yeah, Kevin, how many jobs do you have?
Six.
Six jobs. Kevin has six jobs. Your problem, Kevin, you just need to work. You just need more jobs. You just need to take on more jobs. That's the problem with you, buddy. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to tell you that. But you look down at your shoes. Do they have straps? You need to pull yourself up by them.
Okay.
Remember when we all... I'm just giving you life advice, buddy. I'm just helping you out. Because that's the
From
only problem
ivory
with you
tower
and all these...
With your Tesla.
That's the problem. See, but it's not that I've been lucky. It's not that I've gotten breaks. Oh, no. It's just that I worked 15 jobs at once. Actually, I did work like a lot in my mid-20s. But that's besides the point. It's ridiculous to tell people that they just need to work harder and then not pay them more. It's ridiculous to tell people that you can't afford a new house, but we can't afford your eyesore of a house to still exist in our community, and then go, why are there so many homeless people? It's ridiculous. Remember when we were all 12 years ago making fun of this guy, Jimmy McMillan? Does that name ring a bell to anybody? It was in the New York governor debate. I think he was still on the ticket, but where he really made a splash was in the gubernatorial debate. Back in, I guess this was 2010.
I represent the rent is too damn high party. People are working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week, and some a third job. Women can't afford to take care of their children, feed their children breakfast, lunch, and dinner. My main job is to provide a roof over your head, food on the table, and money in your pocket. This is politics as usual. Playing a silly game, and it's not going to happen. The rent too damn high movement, the people I'm here to represent can't afford to pay their rent. They're being laid off right now as I speak. They can't eat breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Listen, someone's stomach, child's stomach just growled. Did you hear it? You gotta listen like me.
Okay.
Let's talk about the issue.
And they cut him off. They cut him off. And we all laughed at him. Worked on a show that played clips of him all the time. Wanted me to set like beats and stuff underneath it, make little songs out of things he was saying. This was in 2010, where the housing crisis was really killing people. He is 100% right. But he was a joke back then because, well, he, you know, was a little bit flamboyant. He wore black gloves to the debate. He had a strange mustache. But who cares? He's making a great point. Here's a question. Why is rent so high? Why is rent so high? Do you want the very basic answer to that question? Why rent is so high, not just in Seattle, all across the country now. You look anywhere, and look at Nashville, okay? Look at renting a house, a three-bedroom house in Nashville. It'll cost you at least $3,000. It's becoming that way all across the country. It's not just Seattle. The reason why is because mortgages are too high. People can't afford to buy houses, so they're renting. Well, why are mortgages so high? Simple answer is because people aren't building houses. So there's a limited supply of houses that can be bought. So the price goes up. So furthering this, why aren't people building houses? Simple answer is when the bubble burst on the housing market in 2008, a lot of contractors and people who built houses lost their jobs or couldn't find work because nobody could buy a house anymore. So nobody was building them. So they went into other lines of business. So now we have a limited amount of people who can build houses. And even with some of them coming back, which happened, in 2020, the pandemic hit, and all of a sudden everything stopped again. That's the simple reason why rent is so high. It's because we're not building enough houses. We are failing at something that Americans take so much pride in, and it is ridiculous to me. I almost sometimes wish I was British or French or something, just so I could chortle at us with our roll up your sleeve, pull yourself up by your bootstraps attitude that we have justifiably for a lot of reasons in this country. But the number one reason that people are homeless, people are being kicked out of mobile home parks that are being razed to the ground, the reason why it's going to cost you half of your gross income to rent a house that you probably hate because it's in a terrible neighborhood is because we're not building enough? How is that America? How is that us? It isn't. Hopefully we start to wake up, realize that. We need to build more. The problem is that they don't have enough people. Contractors are saying, like, well, I don't have enough people to come work for me. So if you're looking for a good job, go work in construction. They really, really need people. I'll end this with some good news, though, just like I did the segment last hour. And by the way, this is good news specifically about the state of Washington and Seattle. Washington State tops the nation for monthly construction jobs. So Washington added more construction jobs in April than any other state in the nation, according to analysis by the Bureau of Labor Statistics data, blah, 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 BLS. So that means that at least in Washington, we're starting to get it. At least there, we're like, you know what we need? We should build more houses. And maybe not McMansions that take up a ton of space and only one family's going to live in. Maybe rows of townhouses. Maybe smaller houses that individual families can afford to live in. It's crazy that this is the reason why we're having so many problems in this country is because we're failing at the thing that we're supposed to be the best at, and that's building. It's just crazy to me. Coming up, we got Kevin's music news. What are we going to be talking about in the music news there, Kevin?
It's a surprise.
It's a surprise?
Yeah, man.
It's a prize for sirs.
Yes, yes.
All right, Kevin's got some music news. And then we're going to be talking about, I don't know, nothing serious the rest of the show, I promise. I'm done. I'm done with the serious stuff. What?
You tapped us out with the sad stuff.
Yeah, I'm tapped out. It's Monday. I'm done day.
All right, we'll be talking about the Foo Fighters' new drummer. He's not so new in the world of music.
We will.
But he's
really excited to be talking about this.
Incredible.
All right.
All right.
All right. That's next on Cairo Nights. Cairo Nights, how you doing, everybody? It's me, Jonathan. And I guess we're listening to the Vandals right now.
Yeah, this is a song called I've Got an Ape Drape by off the album Hitler Bad, Vandals Good. Yeah, this song's
like
about
they,
mullets.
They went out on a limb like that and really a hot take. Hitler's bad. Vandal's good. And ape drape. I love different words for mullets.
Yeah, they now, say hockey hair, ape drape, stuff like that.
The reason that we're talking about the Vandals right now is because Josh Fries, who is the drummer for the Vandals, had some kind of big news today. What's going on there, Kevin?
He is the new drummer of the Foo Fighters, man. So, yeah, of course. Of course, Taylor Hawkins passed away last year, and unfortunately, you know, Foo Fighters had to take a bit of a hiatus, and understandably so, but they recorded new music, and they have Josh Freese. Now, Josh Freese is not just the drummer of Perfect Circle and Vandals, but he's also, like, a studio recording legend. Like, he is honestly one of the best drummers in the world because he's so adaptable to all different styles. He's played in everything from, I mean, the guy started in 1991 his discography from Dweezil Zappa, and it goes everything to Devo, Juliana Hatfield, Paul Westerberg's Suicidal Tendencies. He played with Mark Mothersbaugh, Chris Cornell. He played, The Dwarves, Perfect Circle, like I said. He played with Sting, The Offspring, The Replacements, Miley Cyrus, Avril Lavigne, Kelly Clarkson. He played with Danny Elfman, The 100 Gex, which is like a really weird, glitchy pop group. Like, this guy is all over the place. Michael Bublé to Weezer to Slash, Melissa Auf-Demar from Hole, Katy Perry. It's great. Joe
that
Cocker.
That is more impressive. If you told me, like, he played
Nine Inch Nails,
like, with Rush, or he played with, you know, a band, like, I don't know,
Rob Zombie. Like, he's playing everyone.
Like, yeah. If you told me he played with some metal band that was like Polyrhythmic or something like that,
Meshuggah or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, or something like that, then I'd be like, oh, that's interesting, but that's he's just a weirdo. It takes so much skill to have that broad of a talent where you can play with the weirdos, but
he's
you
a beast.
Can also do the straightforward stuff and not get bored and do it well. And so that's very exciting news, and good for him that he is going to be the replacement for Taylor Hawkins, at least as drummer. Don't you think it would have to be, though, even if you're Josh Freese, don't you think it would have to be really intimidating to be Dave Grohl's drummer?
Yeah.
I love Dave Grohl, and I'm not somebody who thinks he's the greatest drummer of all time. I think he had one of the best drumming sounds of all time. He knew how to get the most out of the instrument, and I don't think Nirvana would have been as successful without him. But obviously, he's an incredibly gifted musician.
For sure.
I don't know how you... It would be like if you had Tom Brady as your coach in football or something like that. Like, you had somebody who's recognized as an all-time great who's also kind of your boss. It would just, I don't know that I could do it.
How do you think I feel board hopping for the great Jonathan Weir?
I was hoping that you were saying that. That's why I was leading the conversation in that direction. Who is the greatest drummer of all time?
You're asking me for my personal opinion?
Well, I'll ask the text line as well. 888-973-5476, 888-973-KIRO. You can just text the letters KIRO, and we'll be able to see those texts. The greatest drummer of all time, just like, they don't have to be the person who played the craziest stuff. It doesn't have to be somebody who was, like, inventive, necessarily, because a lot of people might say Neil Peart from Rush. He was great, but I don't consider him the greatest. Some people would say Dave Grohl. I wouldn't say that.
I'm saying Igor Cavalera. Igor Cavalera from Sepultura. He's my favorite drummer. Yep.
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dale Crover from the Melvins is really, really good.
Yeah.
Well, I would say him. Matt Cameron was in Soundgarden. Very few people consider him like a great drummer, but he's one of those guys that just has the greatest sound. For me, it's Keith Moon from The Who, just because nobody played drums like that then. You know what I mean? Like, nobody in rock bands anyway. He was just a crazy person. And people would go to Who shows and be like, I don't know who that guy, the guy drumming is. I don't know what he's doing, but he's not keeping time with the song. And then they'd listen to the recording and be like, oh, no, he's keeping perfect time with the song, but he's also playing like three other songs at the same time.
Yeah.
So Keith Moon's the guy for me.
How about Tito Puente? Yeah.
I just watched the Who Killed Mr. Burns episode of The Simpsons, so that ref hit hard. Hit hard. All right. I'm gonna continue the music news. In this respect, earlier we were talking about musicians who, you know, might be replaced by AI, and I was like, I don't really care about that, so long as you can perform live. That's where the money is. So I'm going to ask you who you think the richest musicians of all time are and how much they're worth. Okay.
Oh, okay. Richest musicians of all time.
Yeah.
And are they still alive?
Not necessarily. No. They might be, but let's just see if you can name some.
Like how many? Which were top three?
If you can name three.
Top
if you,
three, okay.
You name three, I'll give you imaginary weird points.
Jay-Z?
Jay-Z is number one.
Okay.
Of all time. Yeah. Richest musician of all time. How much is Jay-Z worth?
$3
billion. This says he's worth $2.5 billion. That is not accurate. He's worth more than that, from what I've heard. I hear it's closer to five. But there you go. That's good. All right, who else?
Paul McCartney?
Paul McCartney is the third richest musician of all time. He is worth how much?
$1.5 billion.
$1.2 billion.
And,
all right, 2 for 2.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson is not on here. And this isn't a list of living musicians, so that's interesting. I thought he would be on there, too. I'll tell you who's on here that's actually surprising.
Who is it?
Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, he's actually worth as much money as Paul McCartney. So good for him. Good for him. Writes musicals. Not a fan of all of his work, but certainly understand why he has that much money. Also, notable people on the list. Dolly Parton at $670 million. Bono at $750 million. Celine Dion, who I believe you have to be Canadian to appreciate, is worth $800 million. So there you go. It's Cairo Nights. I just met you, and this is crazy, but here's my number, so call me maybe, it's hard to look right at your baby, here's my number. All right,
great
you know what? Let's
song,
do this
great
right
song.
Now. Let's do this right now, Kevin. And actually, you're not going to be on the show on Friday, are you?
No, I'm going to be at a death metal festival.
You're going to be at a death metal.
Yeah, shout out Northwest Terror Fest.
All right, then let's do it right now. What is a stone cold top 40 pop song that you consider a guilty pleasure for you? Because you are, you know, a metal dude, host a metal show. I once hosted a metal show, but typically my taste trend towards rock, classic rock, slightly some hardcore stuff sometimes, but. Not cookie monster stuff. But anyway, what is a like stone cold top 40 guilty pleasure for you?
So here's the thing. You said the word guilty pleasure, and honestly, I don't believe in the words guilty pleasure. I don't feel guilty about anything. I host a metal show where I get super brutal, but I listen to...
I love that answer.
I do not feel guilty. I like music. I like cheesy music. I like heavy music. I like poppy music. There's no guilt in what I find pleasure in. Both on the internet and in music, you know?
Let me rephrase it, you pedantic bastard. Okay.
I know what you mean, though. And I'll play one.
Okay, you know what? I like the answer. I don't want to cause a debate over guilty pleasure versus whatever. So I'll rephrase the question. What is a song that you like that people might be surprised to find out that you like?
I'll play it. Let's hear it. Okay.
Okay, let's do it.
I love it.
Is it any Mariah Carey song or just this one?
That one. There's quite a few, but I don't love all Mariah Carey, but yeah, I love this song.
Okay, mine is this, and I'm going to play this, and anybody out there who's like, oh, that song, so, you're full of crap. Everybody knows that this song slaps. This one right here.
Yeah.
That is one of the greatest hooks of all time. Baby, can't you see I'm calling? Now, granted, I don't think I liked this song until Local H did a cover of it, and I really, really liked the cover that Local H did, but I don't think anybody can deny that Toxic is a banger. It just is.
It is a banger. It is. You want to hear another banger? Yeah. I got another one. I know, yes. I got a guilty pleasure for you. Let's go. Too many shots, think we kiss, but I forgot. Last Friday night, now we max your credit cards and we kicked out. Katy Perry for you? What do you think?
I honestly don't know this, though.
Okay, sorry. Well, it's a Katy Perry jam, Last Friday Night.
What
it's
is
got
the song?
834 million streams. It's called Last Friday Night.
I'm sure
TGIF.
It does. What song was it?
TGIF, Last Friday Night by Katy Perry.
Don't know it.
Yeah.
Don't know it. I know a couple. I know I Kissed the Girl. I guess I know.
You're So Gay. Do you know that song?
Yeah, I do. I do know that song. I know that song.
It's pretty, I don't know if it held up so well, but hey.
No, not so much. It's a great song, though. We played that song at my college radio station. And because of that, actually, she did an interview with us. This was before she was huge. That was like her first single. It was You're So Gay. And nobody else was playing it except for our stupid college station when she came to town. And so, like, we were like, hey, we're the only one playing your song. So, you know, come do an interview. And she did. And then, like, literally a week later, she was the biggest pop star on the planet because I Kissed a Girl and I Liked It came out.
Dude, I saw her at Warped Tour.
Yeah, she was kind of like this edgy.
She was marketed,
you know,
towards edgy.
That's what it was at first. Yeah. And then it was like, this isn't working so much. Let's go with the she's really hot. Like, why don't we go with that angle?
But she was originally a Christian musician in her early days. Yeah,
that.
She was a Christian pop artist, and then, you know, she kind of fell off there that in that quote-unquote market, and then she came back, you know, like 8 years later or something as a, you know, pop sensation. But she originally started, I saw like all kinds of punk bands at Warped Tour, and on the side stage it was Katy Perry, and then like flash forward a year later and she's the biggest thing. So this is the Katy
There's
Perry
no
show
way.
In Cairo.
There's no way we could play You're So Gay, is there?
No, I'm going to play I Kissed a Girl.
Okay, you can play that. You can play that. We actually tried to play I Kissed a Girl and I Like It, and people were like revolting, like revolted and revolting in the audience. Like, what are you doing? Why are you playing? It's like, because her last song worked for us. We thought we'd try this one.
Not so much.
That one didn't work out so well. Not so much. I don't know where I was going with this. I don't have... I would say that actually another guilty pleasure is All About That Bass by Meghan Trainor.
Oh, no, dude. Really?
Yeah. Oh, come on. I like the doo-wop parts. What, are you going to sit there and act like that's not a jam?
I mean, it's explicit, so I can't play that one.
You can't play All About That Bass?
No, it's a little explicit. It's like,
no trouble.
Is this like JoJo Siwa rapping or something? What is that song?
I have no idea what you're talking about. What, the All About That Bass?
Yeah, that's by JoJo Siwa, right?
No, it's not by, it's Mike Meghan Trainor. What the hell's wrong with you? I will also say, I'm very much on board with your whole I don't have a guilty pleasure thing, I just like music thing. I don't really hate a lot of the children's songs that I've been subjected to over the course of my parenthood with my children. Baby Shark does not bother me at all. It weirds me out how many parents are like, oh, I hate that song. It's like, have you been even paying attention to the other songs your kids are listening to? Because I got to tell you, Baby Shark is an absolute assault compared to those other songs. It is a slapper. If I have to hear the Caillou theme song again, I'm going to throw a small child out of a window.
The song I'm going to, you know, kind of play as the bed music for this, the end of this break, is the song. It's not going to be Katy Perry. I'm going to play a song that's a guilty pleasure of mine that's going to get stuck in your head for the rest of the night, okay?
Can't wait to hear it. Man, that's right. Oh, no. This is awful. No, this is bad. Is This is one of those songs that I'll deny is going to get stuck in my head. And then tomorrow, I'll be in the car with my wife, and I'll be like, and she'll be like, what the hell are you doing? You know, it's when the piano kicks in that it really, really grabs you.
It's so good.
It is. It's Cairo Nights. Coming up, we got the Doom Scroll. What are some tricks to becoming a morning person? Well, as somebody who had to work morning radio for years, I think I have some insight into this that you might not normally get. Yeah, that's next. Cairo Nights.